Be ready at all times. You will learn that, or you never become Muay Thai fighter.
Tam Chai, Leo, 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 Leo!
Where did you get that haircut? In the army? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 163. We continue to mine the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian, Roger Moore is the best thing in this movie, Dunaway.
Hi, Mr. Van Damme. Huge fan. Totally stoked about showing you my drunken monkey moves during our fight scenes. But you might not want to, you know, be doing your crotch stretches in the director's chair. Wait, I don't know who is directing this thing, but I'm pretty sure that is not allowed. Oh, you are the director. All right. Kind of regretting telling my entire village I was going to be in a big Hollywood movie now. Shit. Oh, Schlitz.
Nice. I think it was Lohenbrau, but yeah.
It was Schlitz on the big sign.
Oh, no, you're right. I'm thinking of another movie. Yeah. Thinking of another movie. Yeah. Never mind.
Muay Thai, whatever.
Stay tuned next week for a whole other film. All right. Also with us, Randy, none of the clothes in this movie are quite right, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Mm. Brian. I'm just writing to you to thank you for your order of one dragon statue made from a full cubic meter of pure gold. After receiving your advance payment of more money than the gross domestic product of China, Vietnam, and Siam combined, we were able to get started purchasing every gold coin, trinket, piece of jewelry, and tooth filling in Asia and Eastern Europe and begin construction. Unfortunately, about halfway through the project, the dragon began to weigh more than the moon and broke through the floor here, then the foundation, and then the Earth's crust. Please advise.
Hadn't thought about any of that, but you're right.
Actually, this is something I thought a lot about.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah.
That thing, and have it out in the open, too, by the way. Just have it sticking out, sitting out there. Easy to take.
Who's going to steal it?
You just need a dirigible. Nope. Also with us, Brian, Maxi Divine sounds more like a stripper than a boxer ibbot.
That sounds like something you get in the ladies' aisle at the supermarket.
Oh, yeah.
First rule of secret Tibetan fight club is don't tell people you're Maxi if you're not freaking Maxi.
That dude from the Warriors.
Yes.
Who that was.
James Remar.
Yeah. Dexter's dad. Back for another film sacking here.
That's right. We can't get rid of the guy.
The movie is The Quest, everyone. The Quest. You need to go talk to your trainer, and then he'll give it to you, and you go from there. Directed by Jean-Claude Van Damme, his one and only directorial debut, I think. Did he direct anything else? I shouldn't say that. I should know. I should have looked at that before. I think that was it.
That is. I remember it being a big deal at the time.
It was.
And, it was a huge deal.
Two things. Soldiers in 2010 he directed.
Is that
like Universal Soldiers, but not so universally, just kind of like localized?
It says, right. Originally called The Eagle Path, later changed its name to Soldiers.
Sorry, The Eagle Path. I don't know why that makes me laugh.
That's a weird name.
The Eagle Path.
Because eagles fly.
Right, exactly. So as the eagle flies.
So even the album art on IMDb for Soldiers says The Eagle Path on the album art.
Somebody probably pointed that out after they did their whole marketing.
It's got a 7 out of 10 on IMDb. That makes me wonder good.
The Quest, mine's got 5. Oh, you're talking about the other one.
Yeah, the Eagle Path. Maybe his second effort was a little bit better than his first, because his first.
Hey, you don't know that.
What?
I may have loved this movie.
You may? Okay. I'm not going to assume anything. I'm going to come into this blind. I don't know you. You don't know me. I don't know what you like. I have no idea what you'd think of this movie.
That's better.
We'll talk about all that in a minute after Scott Fletcher has our way with us.
The Quest. Kidnapped by a pirate in the 1920s, New York City street criminal Chris Dubois ends up under the tutelage of Cao, a master kickboxer who forces Dubois to participate in a legendary and lethal Tibetan fighting competition.
It's kind of Frenchist. Reading there.
I love it.
A little Frenchist.
They did do that. Because like for the first 20 minutes of the movie, they must have said his name like at least 50 times.
Yeah.
Dubois.
Yeah. And it was always some gangster, some cartoon gangster.
Right.
Who had to do it.
Representing America.
Right.
Christopher Dubois.
It doesn't really, the first like 15 minutes of this movie could have been anything, right?
Newsies.
Yes.
Right? Totally like he could have been serving on a naval ship. He could have been training to climb Mount Everest. Like anything you can come up with, right. You can stick in the first 15 minutes of this movie, right?
It's basically Willy Wonka invitation is basically all it is.
Right.
The pre-invitation.
So that's the only salient thing too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is the fact that it you find out there's going to be some sort of like kumite. And I thought about this when I'm watching this movie. I'm like, oh, this is a Tournament of Champions movie. Great. That's so many movies have done it. And then when I started to look around, I realized, you know what? A lot of those movies came after this.
Mm. Right,
like,
right.
This is actually a little earlier than I expected.
Except for Bloodsport.
Right, yeah. It's a remake of Bloodsport.
No, you're right. But it is kind of, isn't it? He kind of took the blood. In fact, there's other people involved in this, some stunt people and some other stuff. Old friends he made on
I thought it was a remake of Mortal Kombat.
Exactly.
You got Street Fighter in my Mortal Kombat. Yeah. You got Mortal Kombat in my Street
Fighter. Well, I said to my wife while we were watching it, I said, This is Mortal Kombat without the magic. That's all this is.
Mm. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Nobody
kept waiting for somebody to pop out with four arms. Didn't happen.
There's a little magic. I mean, it's a little tiny bit of magic.
The sumo wrestler, was he? Is this fat kind of magic?
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah. Yeah. There's a scene when you first realize that you're getting to see some of the fighters that you're going to see at the Tournament of Champions. Is a scene in a bar where Freddie Mercury walks in and he breaks a table with his fist.
That was pretty magical.
That was magic there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a kind of magic.
But there were. But there were no hell demons with hooks on ropes and but it didn't have any of that kind of stuff. Nobody was freezing anybody, but it definitely had that vibe of well, I mean it you almost could call if this had just slightly better acting. Well, oh, I'm sorry. Did I say slightly? I meant entirely better acting. If it had a better acting, better script overall, the actual tournament fighting stuff maybe. While a little bit rote, was a lot of fun. Like it was, I like that elimination, and everyone's a theme. Like Russian guys dressed like a Russian guy with a Russian hat, and
it almost was right. Like M. Bison almost would have
right,
been.
Right. And you had E. Honda hat. There.
All right, so let's start with our first. This we're gonna have to go around the table like a dozen times. This movie.
Yeah.
If this was a video game, which character would you choose to play?
Oh, easy.
The snake dude, the wiggly worm dude.
Yeah, the Chinese guy.
The Chinese guy who did different if you weren't aware the fact that he was doing different animal styles, they had the audience talking about it as well. Oh, I get it. He's doing monkey style.
Well, you could have picked Eddie Gordo, the guy from Tekken who did the weird Brazilian dance fighting style thing.
What you mean capoeira?
Capoeira.
Yeah, you mean the one that got his butt kicked immediately?
Yeah. Right. Yes. And there's a few people in the audience who heard me say Eddie Gordo and knew exactly who I was talking about. So props to you people. But anyway, the point is, I would have picked, or here's who I would have picked. Who was the guy who got beat real bad by the Mongolian beef, but it was real bad? Like,
the Korean.
No, there was a Korean.
The Japanese guy, the Japanese, Dubois' boyfriend, the one that the Mongolian killed, and he Dubois finished.
Oh, I don't want him, not him. It's a guy bandana. That there was somebody who looked really grizzled and tough and had amazing upper body chiseling going on. And I don't remember what country he was from, but I think he was the style of character I often pick in a game like that. Mm. I pick based on look.
German?
Yeah, no, German guy was kind of cool though. Mm-hmm. But everybody was so like.
I'm telling you, it was a Korean. You just.
No, he was a white guy with like a red mustache. It wasn't.
Oh,
it was
the Irishman.
The Irish guy.
Oh, the Irish guy. Okay. The Irish guy. Now the Scottish
wearing a kilt.
The Scottish guy wore a kilt, right?
he got his nuts crushed. That's the one. Remember? Yeah.
You know what he looked like to me? Who was in the show? The thing after BSG? I can't think of the name of the show.
Caprica.
Yeah. Who played Rocky Dennis? I can't think of his name.
Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz. I looked like Eric Stoltz. Come out all ginger looking and stuff. That was great. I just looked at him and went, you're not going to last through this. You're not. There's no way.
That guy, by the way, Mike Lambert, is Michael Lambert VI, according to IMDb, has been in Gladiator, Batman Begins, The Bourne Ultimatum, and Kick-Ass.
Wow.
Oh,
but nice. all his stunts.
Yeah, among other things. Like, his list includes Les Miserables and Game of Thrones and Captain America, and it just goes on and on and on. You think it's like, oh, we're making a movie or TV show? We have to include Mike Lambert.
He is a hot stunt property.
The only thing that we've seen him in as an actor is Armageddon.
Oh.
As a quote-unquote actor.
You mean the it's the only movie he's ever acted in?
Oh, and you know what? I'm sorry. That's a 1997 Chinese movie called Armageddon.
I was about to say.
It's not Armageddon.
We haven't seen Armageddon on the show.
Not Armageddon.
Right, but we haven't seen Armageddon even on Film Sack yet. You just think we have because we saw Deep Impact.
Right, exactly.
No, we didn't because
I
know I never made a joke about Ben Affleck eating animal crackers out of Liv Tyler's belly button.
God, it just feels like that.
It really does. Like, it feels like we've seen Armageddon 5 times.
It does kind
of. It's the first one we watched 2 weeks in a row. Just
a dash of Deep Impact, a little bit of that Island movie with Steve Buscemi. And
oh my God, that's crazy. We haven't seen it. I could have sworn.
That's pretty great.
I don't think Netflix has given us opportunity yet.
Yeah. So this movie, it's written, by the way, by Frank Dux, coolest name ever, Frank Dux, D-U-X, and Jean-Claude Van Damme himself. Stars Van Damme, Roger Moore, James Remar, or Remar, whatever.
Boy, does it star James Remar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, it sure does. That guy, you know him. Mm-hmm. It's got your lady in there that was basically a chick in the bucket for the last half of the movie.
First half too, man. She never did anything.
I don't know what her point. I don't know the point of her was. I still don't know what the point of having her on there was.
Roger Moore could be suave.
Is that
right?
Is that it?
Yeah,
yeah,
pretty much it.
But then they just brought her along. She
a movie. If you have a hot lady that I can buy drinks for.
Okay, so real up front here. I just want to say I was pleasantly for some reason I had it in my head that this was like Dr. Moreau era, like ugly fat blob man. Roger Moore. Right. And it's not. He's looked great. He's in his 70s in this.
Right.
And early 70s. And he looks great. And he still kind of got it and didn't look that old to me. He looked 50s to me. I was impressed with Roger Moore, who says this is the worst movie he ever worked on, but he brought a certain, Roger Moore-ness to the proceedings. I thought he was great.
He really classed up the place.
I thought so.
Yeah, it was kind of his the comedy stuff that he was providing, the comic relief with the somehow stealing a Nazi blimp.
Right.
Right.
Let's gloss over that.
Yeah. Now, you guys, am I alone where that whole scene where he was trying to steal it with the dirigible and stuff and had his fat friend down at the bottom, did that not remind you of Superman 2 and escaping
totally
from prison?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Gene Hackman and what's his face all over the place?
Ned Beatty.
Ned Beatty. Yes.
I just can't let go that the star of For Your Eyes Only called this the worst movie he's ever worked on. That's hysterical.
That's a good point. Or Moonraker for that matter.
Ooh, right.
Or a lot of other weird roles. But he is I went on a deep rabbit hole thing after I was watching this with him just to see what he's been doing, what's up, what's going on, what are his side projects, like what has Roger Moore been doing? And lately nothing. But he's still around. He still shows up to stuff. He still looks great at 80 something. Like the guy is, I came away from this kind of nostalgic for when I was real young and Roger Moore was the thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right,
I didn't expect that. I expected to watch this and go, wow, this was a lousy swan song. This is Bela Lugosi and Ed Wood's Plan 9 or something.
Like, and you know, I'm just the opposite. This was, I think Roger Moore was a shiny moment for you. I thought it was distracting.
Really?
I thought it was distracting from what?
Been, I mean, maybe I agree with you that it was distracting, but I felt like it distracted me in a good way. It reminded me that this is a movie and we can have some fun with it.
Really the star of the show in this movie was the great shots. They had some fantastic shots and they had some great fight choreography. Other than that, I was like, stop taking me outside to him Keystone copying, stealing the freaking statue. I'm not interested. I want to go back and see the Mongolian sweat and punch another fat guy in the stomach.
Right. If this was on ESPN as opposed to a movie, you'd want to watch the whole thing, right?
Right. I love it when the note I made that I consider the most important is preempted by my teammate Brian Dunaway. That's amazing. The cinematography in this film is so far above the rest of the film's parts. Like
way above its pay grade.
They actually went to Thailand. They actually got out and filmed on location. There was too much of the film, actually, I felt, that were indoors.
Yeah.
I almost wish the fighting itself was taking place on a beach or something.
Well, it almost did. See, it had that Mortal Kombat thing happening, too, where you bust through a wall and now you're on a new stage.
Right now you're outside. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally had that in there. Yeah.
Did you guys break out the Muay Thai leader handbook signal signs to What the Hell We Do Next book?
Right.
Because he kept giving gestures. I'm like, what does that mean? We can go outside now?
My daughter goes, that's not the same as last time, Dad. I go, what are you talking about? She goes, last time he slashed in this motion, and this time he just pointed at him, and he did the same thing.
Right. Make a couple of random gestures.
Yeah. I kept thinking that was our dude from everything else that we've seen him in. I never remember his name, but I always think it's that guy.
The golden child, the guy who gives Eddie Murphy the knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think that's him. And I think the reason all these guys, all these old Asian actors are so familiar is they literally just litter the seasons of MASH. They're just on every MASH episode that needed a dude who was from where MASH was at. Right. They would show up and be there. I like everything about all of that, and I like it that it was cheesy and campy. Last half of the movie, like somebody on Twitter said, "Oh man, the first half of this movie is way better than I thought it would be. The last half's terrible." I'm like, you've got it wrong. You have it backwards.
Exactly. Yeah, once the movie finally gets the tournament going is where I feel like it starts, because you could replace anything up to that with anything, any plot. And I'm putting air quotes around plot here. Up to that point, it could have been about a dog on a balloon ride trying to find a wizard to return a woman back to her farm. Like, seriously, up until that point.
I thought it was going to be about a street clown that saved orphans for a while.
Dude, so man, that weird. That was horrible and fantastic all at the same time, because it was so Jackie
Stilt
Chan.
Stilt fights, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was totally Jackie Chan, yeah.
Very Jackie Chan, but it was also just
not
goofy.
Good.
Like, why are these orphans here? And it's like, okay, I'm fighting for the orphans. Not really. I'm really just interested in money. I didn't get it.
I liked his last of the Mohicans moment where he tells the kid he'll be back no matter what occurs. He'll be back.
Right.
There's like a lot of real fake drama up and early. There's a bunch of mobsters that are just cartoon era freaking Chicago stereotype.
It's 1920s. We have to have mobsters.
Yeah. They had Tommy guns. They fire them in the air, you know, like you're supposed to.
Right. Most dangerous thing in the world is to bust in through an orphanage or orphanage hole and start firing at the air with Tommy guns and running kids over with
hole.
Right,
I remember
kids.
Yeah. Well, this says, so okay, to that point, this says a lot about what I think Van Damme's biggest problem in the movie was, which I don't think he really, I think he sees everything kind of surface-ish and doesn't really look at what a period piece in the 20s might actually look like. So everything felt like Halloween costumes, not authentic, stuff of the day. So they would jump around, and people were using cameras that weren't made for another 30 years. They would have clothes where I just see them waltz up to a door and whatever they were dressed in. And I'm going, that's not even Newsies. That's just like bad. That's bad costume design. So I never felt like I was in the right era. And so when these bad guys that come out of the woodwork weren't having the stereotypic white suit and the Tommy gun pointed in the air, it just took me out. I'm like, no, I want this to be set in the 20s. That is a cool idea.
Yeah.
Was I missing the title cards as well? Because I remember they showed right away that it was like, okay, we're at this location in Tibet. And then there was like traveling the world, and I couldn't tell where they were supposed to be at.
What do you mean? When
they were delivering those notes.
Oh, right.
To different people.
Fighters.
Right. The montage at the top.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, where am I at?
Mentioned that. Yeah, they went around giving everybody the invitations to come and fight. And I'm pretty sure they only showed what, like, 3 or 4 of the total.
Right. Because I wanted to see the Mongolian dude. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see,
You got to see Japanese guy jump up out of a pool naked.
Naked. Right.
Also, it also sent me to the encyclopedia, because it was like, wait a minute, Okinawa versus Japan?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, what?
Okinawa, the 20s.
Yeah.
Pretend it was a different
time. Well, I had to look it up. Okinawa has been part of Japan since 1879.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Don't ruin my movie with your Britannica.
Did you know?
We've seen Van Damme back in the 20s before with Time Cop.
Oh, that's right.
He could have bumped into his little clown self when he was back there.
What the?
Keeping people from jumping out of buildings.
I just went to search for Time Cop because I was going to tell you guys some news, and I typed clown self by accident.
Nice. Well done.
I didn't mean to do that, but you know how you do that? Sometimes you type and listen. And right. Anyway, there's big news.
Clown self is my boy George cover band.
Oh, nice. Big news on that front, though. There's new Time Cop. You know, it's the parody porn version.
Are you going to replace these with the rooster sounds?
I don't know. Probably not. I'm too lazy. Hollywood Reporter reports that Universal has been developing a reboot of 1994's Time Cop. The original is set in the future, 2004, when time travel exists and the government used cops, Time Cop, blah, blah, blah. So they're bringing it back. Van Damme is not involved. Somebody else. And that's fine. Because that first movie's pretty. But we've done that on the show. It's not very good. Mm-hmm.
No.
Ron Silver, not with us, can't come back and touch himself. Not going to happen. although in Time Cock, he can.
Right.
He will be there. That's your imagination. Run. Anyway, so here's some fun trivia. The film is inspired by Frank Dux's, this is the co-writer, his experiences in martial arts tournaments around the world, which also inspired the film Bloodsport, also starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. With this in mind, Frank Dux has been proven to be a fake. Many, if not all, of his exploits are either falsified or, at the very least, extremely exaggerated.
Oh, kind of like Tropic Thunder, then.
The storyline of Tropic Thunder, basically.
Frank Dux is like, you're supposed to say Dukes, Frank Dukes, but we have to call him Frank Dux.
He'd like that, right, Dux. If I called him Dukes, but forget
it.
That up, too.
His whole thing is legendary. Like, he claimed to have... to have traveled as a young man to somewhere in the Far East and learned this really peculiar martial arts style and then gone to all these tournaments and he had trophies and everything. And
wait, is he Batman?
No, but he actually wrote an autobiography called The Secret Man, An American Warrior's Uncensored Story. And then Bloodsport was, supposedly inspired by his life, which turns out to be all fake. And the best part about the uncovering that it's fake is that the main trophy in his house turned out to have been purchased at a nearby trophy store.
Perfect. See, I like the idea of, I know a lot of just regular liars in my life, but I really like a guy who parlays that into a huge career. Yeah, I think that's interesting when that happens.
It's a whole catch me if you can kind of.
Yeah, it is like that. That's what that reminds me of. Great movie, by the way. I love that movie.
Poor old Van Damme.
Let's see. Roger Moore as Lord Dobbs takes the hero to how do you say this? Muay, Thailand?
Muay Thai. I don't know how the land is pronounced, but they always say Muay Thai, right?
Well, he goes there and sells him. Moore was last on this same island, actual island, during the filming of the final scenes of The Man with the Golden Gun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so he went back and I remember the diarrhea I had here about 20 years ago. It was fantastic.
They had to melt that golden gun to make that freaking statue.
They melted the golden gun to make 1 foot.
Yeah.
One paw.
A finger.
Of the dragon.
A finger on that thing. Van Damme's final fight against Khan, played by Abidel Quissi, something like that.
No wonder he's so tough.
Epic mustache that guy had.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was fighting Khan here at the end. And is the second time he's fought the same actor in the final fight of two unrelated movies. First time was in the movie AWOL, Absent Without Leave. The other actor he fought twice in a final fight was Bolo Jung. So he's done this twice. Two different movies, totally unrelated. Same actor, same fight.
And the Abdel Kisi guy was also in The Order and Lionheart, two other JB's CD movies.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, so he's not... Okay, I didn't even mention that stuff. That's cool. I feel like we've seen... Have we seen all the relevant Van Damme movies now? Are we missing any, like, must-sees?
All of them.
All of
wow,
them.
Wow, that just sets up for such a great response.
Oh, I know. We got... Okay, but I know we haven't done Bloodsport.
All the relevant
ones. And we haven't done, like, Double Impact. And
Double Impact, I would call, like, the top. Like, of the list of JVCD... we have to watch Double Impact.
That's the one where he plays an evil and a good version of himself, right?
Right.
Twins, yeah. Or whatever. Or they just twins fighting with each other. I forget how that goes.
Hence the double impactage.
All right. Well, then fine. So there's still required Van Damme viewing. But it just occurred to me while I'm watching this that we've seen more of him than any other headlining actor in film sack.
Even Dolph Lundgren?
Yes. More than Dolph Lundgren. Way more than Dolph Lundgren.
Wow.
Way more than Sylvester Stallone at this point, and he's probably in second. We should probably do the math on this, but I think that's right. Yeah. I think Van Damme is champion.
Well, is Cobra streaming? Because my God, I gotta see.
We tried to see Cobra, remember, and it got pulled, and so we pulled
that's
it.
Right.
I would watch Cobra in a heartbeat.
Yeah, right.
You wouldn't have to ask me twice.
Yeah. Oh no,
to watch Cobra. Anyway, so there's all of that. So old man, let's talk about old man Van Damme for a minute. When he's got the old man makeup at the first.
Yeah, dressed as Christopher Lambert.
Right. Yeah, right. Yes. And also totally. Voiced possibly by Christopher Lambert later, because that wasn't him. It's your own movie, dude. You had someone else do your dialogue for the narrative. Well, I'll play that in the clips. I can't play it. I know it isn't him. You'll hear it and you'll go, oh, wow, okay. It's not him. You just assume it is because that's who's, you know, this is the inner monologue you're hearing, but...
Maybe he can't do an old man voice. Maybe that's just not his thing.
Maybe. But you'll hear it and you'll go, oh my gosh, what were they doing? It's his own movie. He directed it. He couldn't take 5 minutes out and record a little dub over. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
So he goes into this bar.
Right.
And he orders a
orders coffee.
He doesn't even order coffee.
Some coffee. No. The guy's like, can I get you a cup of coffee? Oh, sure, yeah. Can I put some booze in it?
Right.
Okay, how about you just make all my decisions? What the hell? This bartender.
Would you like $100 out of the cash register?
Yeah, like
that was weird.
It was very, very weird.
It's because he knew those 80s gangs were going to come in there and try to steal something. That's why. Because that was the other thing. Was that, I assume, since the movie's set in the 20s, the mid 20s, 25 or whatever it was.
Right.
And then he's old man in the bar. I assume that's like, is he sure it's 96 that they're in there?
Yeah, it's supposed to be 96.
Because that gang is time traveling.
Mm-hmm. They're not only time traveling, they're cliche traveling, man, because it's like we got ourselves an Indian, a biker, right. And
the village people came in to kick JVCD's ass. I don't know why I can't say
it's all right, it's better than
JCVD. I don't know why I can't say that. JCVD.
Better than
JCVD.
Time cock. Better than that.
The village people get destroyed by old man Van Damme.
Yeah, and his cane, which didn't seem to be needed for anything other than kicking someone's butt. But that was, I just felt like that was weird and out of place because I thought, okay, well, this is probably like 85 because this gang is 85 written all over it, not 96. That was no way. That should have been gangster rappers. That should have been. Right. That should have had Biggie behind it, you know, going Biggie, and walk in there and fight like real, not like this weird, like. Like you said, they look like the village people. Anyway, that threw me off the whole movie. Couldn't quite get it out of my head. It took till, you know, Fat Sumo was getting punched real hard. Which, by the way, if your secret power is you just run into a dude and you win, and the only way to beat him is to punch him in the gut, you'd think some of those other fighters would have figured it out before they got to him.
Totally, yeah.
Who's the character from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out that you can only hit in the stomach?
Not Glass Joe, that's the jaw guy.
No, the big one there who runs at you. I mean, this is a...
Fat Hippo.
Thank you.
Wasn't that it? I think it was Fat Hippo.
Yeah,
that was right.
Yeah.
Which is such a
I was waiting for the sumo wrestler to take a crap in his pants is what I was waiting for.
I shouldn't have ate those eggs.
This is the toughest guy in Japan. This guy right here?
Yeah. Well, it's the stereotype. Right. Like, what is Japan? What are their greatest warriors? Well, right now they're sumo wrestlers. And like that, the movie, if anything, the movie won me over was with a thing that I should hate, which is it just did this surface level cartoon treatment of what the warriors are like. So, of course, the German guys looks like Gestapo. Mm-hmm. And I swear that guy looked as German as any German I'd ever seen in my life.
Yes.
And the Scottish guy literally wore a kilt to the fight.
He did.
Horrible fighting gear.
Yes.
You know, the Chinese guy at least was just looking like a Chinese guy. Mm-hmm. But then they had to make him as crazy as possible in terms of his fighting style. So,
well, but he was the most interesting to watch though, by far.
Yeah, I liked his monkey.
I liked his snake and his monkey. Yeah. Both were fantastic.
I liked his monkey. I didn't like his tiger.
His monkey. You didn't care for his tiger?
Didn't care for his tiger.
You didn't care when he went, rawr, rawr. You didn't like that?
No, I didn't. All right. I thought that was dumb. All right. And the premise, okay, I wrote down here something about the premise of creepy Van Damme running an orphanage of kids.
That was just my primary concern.
I just don't even know. Yeah. This is like, it really is like, they were like, okay, so we can make any plot we want up until the point where he starts training for this tournament.
Right.
Let's get out of Mad Libs. And I'm gonna make some blanks and you fill them in and then we'll see what we get.
Yeah.
Okay, so look at that. Look, he came out of street mime wearing, let's see, what was he wearing? Stilts. He's wearing stilts.
And he had a little tear rolling down his cheek, a little fake painted on tear.
Yeah. So I kind of was trying to get the thing he was doing, which was, you know, okay, we got to feel sympathy for the character. Okay, so what do? We got to make him a hero. How do we make him a hero? Well, let's say he's trying to save the orphanage. So we instantly are pulling for him. I wouldn't buy it because I was thinking he's not doing good things to those orphanages.
No, that's what I'm thinking. But see, again, what you just said just again goes back to the cartoon treatment of everything. It's just so surface. It's like, well, how do we get sympathy? We'll make him just trying to help the kids. Well, it couldn't be. That's a simple, dumb notion. There's no complexity to it. It's just surface level stuff. The time I started actually feeling for Van Damme was when he was kidnapped on that ship, had shackles on his arms, and was throwing out somebody's bucket full of shit. Then I felt
Right. And the reason you felt sorry for him was because the Randy Edelman score was so freaking good.
It was good.
And it was, it jumped into your heart and said, feel sorry.
Yeah. Oh,
you must feel bad right now. Yeah. I have spoken.
It was a great soundtrack. I like the the Asian, not Asian influences, whatever, the Thai influences to the music when they got to the place of or the place where they had to fight was really nice. I kept saying, I'd listen to this outside of this movie.
I actually thought it was a little over the top because they were trying to indicate location as well using the music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they kept falling in and out of all these different. I just felt confused.
Well, if you closed your eyes, you could have seen in your head. You'd gone. He's got a bucket of poo on a ship.
No, it got better later on when they stopped traveling the world and they started using more of the slow mo skip frame crap they were doing.
Oh my god, they overused that, didn't they?
Yeah, it's like no, we need right here slow mo.
Let's see. He's breaking a table in half. Oh, let's watch it slowly. Oh, the guys. I mean, some of the fight stuff is like, all right, I can appreciate it because it's in slow motion. Sure. Totally understand that. But when they use it for every, I mean, whenever, when you get a brand new hammer and everything looks like a nail, there's a problem.
Yeah. Actually, it's, this is something I wanted to bring up. And there are really egregious examples of this with other people's work. Peter Jackson uses it all the time, and I hate it. It's what I like to call stop motion, slow motion.
Yeah. Exactly.
That skip jittery brain. Bullshit. Yeah. I freaking hate it. I hate how it looks. I don't like how it makes me feel. I don't want it in my movie.
Is it some kind of time adjustment or something? Because I wonder myself, because what they do is they're dropping frames. They're doing slow-mo, but they're dropping frames out of it. Is it to make it a faster?
I think it's a technique, and I think it's a dumb one.
I do, too.
Because there were other times they weren't using it. There's a scene where his split scene where he jumps up and you get to see his crotch real good.
Right, when he was at the director's chair.
Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm. They use regular good old-fashioned slow motion in that. I don't like that, and when it gets used when Aragorn is swinging his sword at all the freaking Nazgul and he's trying to get Frodo out of the way and they use that, I just go, stomp freaking using that. And I was really happy that they didn't use any of that in The Hobbit.
Right.
Which was nice. Maybe he came to his senses. I don't know. Lost all that weight and said, what the hell have I been doing? So anyway, I mentioned Roger Moore. By the way, so I did the math. 16 years ago, this movie was made. A little more than that.
Wow.
He was almost 80 then. Hold on. Wait. 70? No, that can't be right because he's 85 now.
Not right at all.
85 now. He'd have been 75. So he'd have been 74 years old.
Right, right.
So I'm just saying. Man, we could all do a lot worse.
I love it when you do math. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good, right?
He was born in 27, so he was 59.
Wow. He was born when this was all going on.
69. Can I do math?
69? Yeah, no, that's 69. Not right.
Yeah, he was born in 27, so he was 69.
Yeah, but if he's 85 now, 10 years ago it would have been 75. Oh, you're right.
You're totally right. Wow.
You're totally right.
Did you ever make a Scott Does Math bumper?
Because
it's fun.
No,
there was one, yeah. Scott Does Math. It was like a thing, wasn't there?
It takes math to do it, so I didn't.
I think we were just sung it.
I guess it was just sung, yeah.
No,
it takes math.
I think someone did play that. I noticed the goiter still up on that forehead of Van Damme.
Yeah,
that goiter.
That's the only way you can defeat him. Either that or pump his shoes up.
That's his Achilles goiter.
Yeah.
Right.
Boom. Right there in the goiter head. Boom.
All right. So Dexter's dad. So this is a guy we said in Warriors was a high point. It was one of the actors you were like, wow, he's putting in a performance here, and he's great on Dexter and he's great on other things. He is terrible in this. Terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's basically playing a character of one of those guys that you see lifting weights on the beach with a onesie.
Right, with the fisticuffs kind of style.
Right, putting both hands and fists up in front of you. Hey, you put them up.
Yeah,
you know,
put them up, Shane. Let's fight now, Shane.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But when he was called upon to root at the end for Van Damme's character, oh, that's nothing but trouble. I didn't like any of that stuff. It was all real. Like I felt like I was watching an actor be just embarrassed because he was told what to do and he did it.
Right.
But Van Damme did not know how to. Okay, look. If all Van Damme directs is fight scenes, I think we maybe have something there.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's where he's best. But everything else, just shit.
Mm-hmm. He did really good with the fight scene. Like I said, the choreography was beautiful. And some of the shots near the beginning were really fantastic.
I think they missed an opportunity, though. At one point, the movie became Fellowship of the Ring, where they all kind of met up and decided they were going to go together and do this great quest together. And then
they
forgot the girl existed and everyone got dumb.
And that's the weird thing. It's called The Quest. And you really, like, we just talked about the movie for how long? I don't know, half an hour before we actually talked about it as though it were a quest, because it wasn't. There was no setting out on an adventure and not knowing where you were going or anything like that.
And I didn't know that the gold thing
into a boat and got taken to Thailand.
I didn't know the end goal was that gold thing until he mentioned it, or that it was even a thing he cared about. Now, remind me, did he just see it outside on his way in and go, "That's the thing I want"? I don't know how that went. And is that the best way to get your orphanages fed?
Right. And I got confused because I was thinking. Because when they put the medal on his neck, I was like, what the crap? So you've been touting the big giant statue and all you're giving him is this little freaking medallion?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's stupid. But then I found out when I read on Wikipedia, I'm like, no, Brian. He did that so that he could get Roger Moore and his buddy out of there. Yep. So that's what he agreed to. He agreed to give up his booty. And I'm thinking, they give that much gold away every year?
Yeah.
That big old lion
every
thing?
5 years. It was 5 years.
Every 5 years, I'm sorry.
Oh.
God,
but you got to move it yourself. Bring your own truck. Like, what the hell?
Right.
Well, I don't
bring
know.
Your own blimp.
Bring
your own dirigible.
like, there's no way.
What Nazis are there for?
There's not enough hot air in the planet to lift that thing.
Yeah, there was no way. That was all such malarkey. And three bullets took the thing down anyway.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't even blow those arrows. You're right.
They took it down with the aid of shaky cam. Like,
Roger Moore's all Star Trekking up there, just kind of shaking back and forth. All right, Roger, could you move through the left and the right? I can't do that now.
I just can't stop thinking about how much that statue must have weighed.
Best I could figure is it was just gold plated.
I thought it was going to be something weird, like inside of it was the remains of the king or something. Yeah, something dumb like that. Like
they go out of their way to say it's solid gold. Yeah. They say the phrase solid gold. There's no way.
Yeah.
Like, why did they make it so large?
Yeah. And did you molten it right there and hope you never had to move it again? I mean, there's just no way.
Well, they had to have a reason to have the blimp, and they certainly couldn't have him flying a blimp to carry away something about the size of his hand.
I could see gold leaf, or I could see, you know, some other method. It's just it becomes impractical at that point.
If all you're going to do is swoop in and steal something, you don't need to go through all the other rigmarole.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't, like, you just swoop in and steal it. This is the 1920s.
Yeah, and you could also say chick in the bucket is where did they get the blimp? Where was that the whole time?
Yeah. Well, they showed it earlier. I mean, they showed the Germans arriving in it or the Germans in Thailand with it.
Oh, so you just go steal it.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you know, it would have been a scene all in and of itself, like tiptoeing.
Right.
And wouldn't a German blimp be worth more? Or at least a good bit?
They'll never hear us take this thing away.
Never. Okay, so there's another thing about the statue, and then I'll shut up about the statue. So when they're leaving, there's a sunset moment at the end, literally, again.
Right.
And they're leaving, and he does this thing where as he's walking, this whole time he's fighting so hard for the statue, I guess, so he can get it. And as he walks by it, he gives it a glance, but then never looks at it again. Just kind of looks at it like, oh, yeah, I remember when I wanted you real bad like 10 minutes ago, but now I don't want you anymore. I have what I need. I have this girl I've never talked to and these other stupid people with me. So then he just keeps moving. For whatever reason, maybe this means I've watched too many movies, but I immediately was reminded of the near the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And you got Sean Connery reaching in there holding on to Indy for dear life. And there's the grail, not 1 foot away from his other hand.
Yeah. Right.
And he has to tell Indy, let it go. The pension man shall pass. Or whatever. and he ends up not taking it. And then suddenly it never matters again. And I don't know why, but it was as if I was picked up and chucked through time to watch that, like, just said, hey, remember that in Indiana Jones? I don't know why it came so strong. Right. I'm probably the only one, but it was weird.
Yeah. And then the part where Van Damme gets in the refrigerator, that was awesome.
What?
Survived the nuclear blast. Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
Oh, that movie. Can we pretend that movie just didn't happen? That hideous thing. I don't even want to do it for film sack.
Really? I do. I actually...
Shut up.
It has become that thing that is so bad that I actually enjoy watching.
Really? You've seen the Crystal Skull more than once?
Oh, yes. I've seen it several times.
Oh, my gosh. I hated that movie so much.
It is really a good bad movie. It really is.
It's not. It's incoherent. It's long. It doesn't have anything fun or exciting in it. It's terrible. It's terrible, dude.
I'm going to disagree. There's big giant ants. There's a chase scene.
You're going to name everything that's wrong with it, aren't you?
That's what makes it so great. There's a
refrigerator.
Yeah, there's an alien head. There's a guy jumping into a refrigerator. I mean,
forget it. I'm sold. I'm back. I love it.
There's
it's a great
crystal
movie.
Skull.
Yeah. There's a skull in there. It's made out of crystal.
If you forget that it's an Indiana Jones movie,
Scott,
I'm telling you. If you forget it's an Indiana Jones movie, it's actually entertaining.
I would believe. But it's just so hard for me to not compare it.
Yeah,
to
how can you not? Yeah, you can't just go, I'm going to pretend this is not Harrison Ford and this is not Indiana Jones.
Watch me.
Every time they say Indiana, I'm going to say Billings.
If you accept the fact this is a Shia LaBeouf film, it's actually one of his better.
Is that how you look at it?
When you accept that.
That's not really going out on a limb.
You just made my day. Randy, you were saying something.
I'm so blown away that Scott just did his point your titties north voice.
Did I do that?
Yeah.
The back to Van, another Van Damme movie.
Step on the gas.
Step on the gas. I love that guy. Mm. One of my favorite moments in film history. All right.
Point your titties north. You never beat that.
No. Anyway, that's all I can think. Oh, yeah, we talked about the slow-mo. We talked about Eddie Gordo. Fisticuffs, 1920.
Fisticuffs.
I got nothing else.
We didn't talk enough of that.
It's really, really awesome, this concept. And I love it that you don't really have that sort of thing in films, this whole kumite, every representative from every corner of the globe thing. Because at the same time these sorts of movies were gaining popularity, so was the actual Ultimate Fighting Championship. And why have a movie like this when you could turn on the UFC in the 90s and see all the different styles competing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, the last half of that movie was a whole lot of fun, and I really enjoyed that part, and I don't have a problem with it. And I enjoyed it in a kind of video game way. And, you know, they were like they're like theme planets, Brian Ibbett, like we talk about all the time.
Yes.
Except there are fighters in this case. But the best sci-fi is full of theme planets, and the best tournament fighting thing has theme fighters. And this had theme fighters up the butt.
Yeah, can we talk real quick about the Jamaican fighter?
Yeah, you like him?
Yeah, he was, hey man, you know, he was pretty laid back and he didn't do very well either. But so neither did the African, fighter with the little boots on.
Representing a whole continent.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Come out there and he's dancing, he's jiggling, he's going, you know, he's dropping his shoulders down.
The guy
down
behind
and
him playing the conga drums, right?
Yeah.
I think we should just be glad they didn't have him show up with a spear and a shield.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
How come the Mongolian beef killed just the one dude and nobody else? How come he was murderous with him and not anyone else?
Why did he kill a Japanese guy? Did he really
in
fury? Well, that was... Right. That was Van Damme's boyfriend. So that really, you know, he was after Van Damme. Really.
And then Van Damme red carded him because he walked up and wiped blood on his neck.
Look at it.
Yeah, this Look is on you. And then talked about throwing the fight the next day.
Right.
That deflated the revenge factor for me. It was like, you just killed my friend, which we really didn't establish very well in the plot. And then wiped blood on him. And then the next day he's thinking, yeah, I'll throw the fight so we can get that blimp. Sure.
Right. Hey, I loved... some of the shots they took of their faces when they were getting hit. Yeah. They did that really good because it really looked like contact.
A couple times, I think there was, these are professionals. I think there was a lot of contact.
Actual contact?
Yeah, I do. Like when you sometimes in movies, you know, you just don't buy because every angle is guy's back and three quarters of his head are to you, to the camera, and the other guy's swinging punches in a place where you never would see the contact. And this would do some full on like profile shot of a kick to the head or to the face or a punch or whatever. And that stuff looked real to me. Some of it did. Not all of it, obviously.
It looked great. Yeah. He did a really good job framing the shots on that. I guess he was involved with that, but I think that looked fantastic.
I would have hired people to do the directing of your movie. And then you just really, because you're in charge still, you're executive producer, you still just zero down on what you're good at. That would have been so much better of a film.
And well,
also,
you know,
and
hey,
also just go straight to the tournament. Screw all this other business. You don't need to go everywhere else and talk
and
sit in restaurants.
Well, you
got to
feel like there's got to be some reason, you know, somebody's going to want to understand why they're all gathered together. And really, right. I mean, you know, Randy hit it on the head. It's a false plot line to bring all these people together when really, okay, all these invitations, great, boom, you're all here, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, could have been anything.
Well, in the end, still, go ahead.
What kind of world would it be, though, if this movie never existed, though? No, I disagree. I think Van Damme, I think this had to happen. This is kind of one of those.
But I never saw it until today, and my life was all right.
It's fate. No, but it existed in the world, and it influenced everything else around you. I'm telling you, this, it has to exist.
And could there have been a better choice to play a Jack Dempsey character than James Remar?
I think he was all right. Except
he was
the acting.
Awesome.
Except the acting.
Man, when they finally fight, when he and Jean-Claude finally get it on, and he takes that ridiculous posture with his fists up. It made me so happy.
Yeah. The mustache is all that guy needed. He was fine.
And of course, Van Damme just kicks him in the leg. It was so cute.
Yeah. It's adorable.
It was. What kind of rules did they extend to themselves when they went outside as opposed to being inside? Because I didn't see any rules that they really had to adhere to inside.
You could go through windows. You could accidentally punch someone in the crowd because everybody was like 2 inches from everything.
Get it pause if you needed to.
Yeah, you get it pause. You could do, I think it was down, right, up, BB or something.
Love it.
One last thing. So we talk about Van Damme movies a lot on the show. We've covered many of them. And we've talked before about our favorite Van Damme movies. And So every time one goes down, I have to reassess and say, all right, well, did that supersede the other, the one I previously thought was my favorite? And I'm not budging. I still say Hard Target is the best Van Damme movie ever made.
Yeah. Anytime you're standing on a motorcycle riding it,
it's pretty badass.
That's pretty much it.
Anytime you kick a can of gas up in somebody's face and then shoot the gun at it and blow him and everyone else around him up, that's pretty
cool. I have a Time Cop for me is the...
That's your ultimate?
That's right. My ultimate, yeah.
Steven Seagal has a moment, and which one is it? The one where he takes the he beats the crap out of everybody with the towel and the pool ball.
Oh, that's not the one we saw. It's a later one.
Right.
Oh, he's in the suit already. Then this is when the black suit was always never off. I don't remember any of it.
And he wasn't helping Eskimos during this one. So I'm trying to narrow it down.
He wasn't trying to stop a train or whatever the hell it was crashing.
No, wasn't doing the boat. Wasn't trying to fight Tommy Lee Jones or. But anyway, that one is that's my moment that I was like,
wait, when does he fight Tommy Lee Jones? What is this? When does that happen?
Under siege.
Oh, was Tommy Lee Jones in that?
Wasn't he the bad guy?
No,
Tommy Lee Jones.
No, that was like Busey, wasn't it?
Was it Busey? It was Busey.
It was Busey.
Or Busey was.
They looked the same to me.
Or I might be thinking of. Oh, I don't know what I'm thinking of. So I found out we have an email.
I'm pretty sure he's in both of them.
We got an email reading next week, not this week, but it's about how we got the girl from Iron Man wrong. It's not Maggie Grace. It's a totally different chick.
Tommy Lee Jones is under siege, first one. And Gary Busey. Take that.
Was it Tommy Lee Jones?
He was the bad guy up the front when they first took the ship.
Did at one point he yell, "I don't care," in a pipe somewhere?
No, but he said he wanted them to check every outhouse and doghouse and
outhouse, henhouse, doghouse, shit house.
That's right.
I think it was Mark for Death is
best
the one
little whorehouse in Texas. One.
It's either Mark of Death or do we see Above the Law? I think it was Marked for Death.
We saw enough.
We saw all of them in one.
I think we saw relevant
ones.
We need to see the one. The one we saw is plenty, is what they're saying.
I have to reel this back in because I missed an opportunity an hour ago to say, no, His best movies are Bloodsport and Kickboxer, and we haven't watched them.
Yeah, all right, fine. It's been too long since I've seen those, so I can't.
And I haven't seen them, so hey.
I am going to agree with you that of the Jean-Claude Van Damme films we've seen, Hard Target's probably the best. But yeah.
It's also the best Woo movie we've seen. Let's put.
I really enjoyed Sudden Death. Like,
I can smell them.
Yeah, Sudden Death has a special place in all of our hearts.
Oh,
I think.
Sudden Death, yes.
Kitchen Fight.
I am just sad to be reminded that his whole name is Jean-Claude Camille François Van Varenberg.
Yeah.
There's no damn in there. There's not a it's Van. It's not even that makes me sad.
Yeah, it makes me a little sad too. Now that you say it.
Jean-Claude Camille François Van Varenberg is his name.
Gordon Sumner agrees with you right now. Sting, everybody. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's get to some clippies. You guys want clips?
Let's do it.
I got a few here. Let's start with this one. This is out of something early. Oh, this is the In the Bar.
Why don't I just put a little taste of whiskey in that coffee? What do you say?
That's nice.
Yes, that's nice.
Oh, that's totally nice. Him by trying to sound old.
No, that's him. That's him. He's not him yet.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The narration.
Yeah, he's coming. Gotcha. The voice in his head bit. We'll get to it. You're going to be like, oh, Scott's right on this one. All right, how about this?
What the hell is this?
I just liked the way the guy said that. I don't remember what that's.
What the hell is this?
What's that from?
What is this? That's
talking into a men's bathroom stall.
I know what it is. It's 20s boxer man getting his invitation.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
What the hell is this?
Right. Because I guess they didn't have a mail service in the 20s.
I bet.
Right.
And they couldn't just write a letter yet.
They had a payphone. I noticed that.
Yeah. But they couldn't just write a letter. They had to put it in a scroll with these two huge sticks of wood through the. It couldn't just be a one stick scroll either. Mm-hmm. It had to be a two stick scroll.
What was the airline propositions in the 20s? Did we have them yet? There were no planes yet, right? Not commercial planes. No. I don't know how those guys got around at all. That seemed like a very I mean, what you
right. That's
a
why
year
you could only
before
hit the tournament
event?
Every 5 years.
That's why there was still.
Ends.
Yeah. It took a year to get all the invitations out, right. And then it took a couple of years for everybody to raise the capital and travel to your tournament.
Well, you gotta wait for 1920s Kinko's to finish printing them.
Right. Exactly. Right. It took forever.
And then you handwrite the names into each one.
And then you'd easily lose three or four of those messengers, and you have to go out and do it again. And yeah,
it was 4.5 years between tournaments constructing the damn dragon trophy.
The last guy that won. All right.
You have to go kill the guy who won the last one, because that's all the gold in the world is in that trophy.
Right.
Here's another moment in the film.
Get down now or we'll knock you flat.
What was that from?
That's the cop. That's the Irish cop.
Oh, the stereotype cop.
Chasing Stiltman.
That's right.
Stiltman.
What's his powers?
There really is a Marvel Comics Stiltman.
There
he's
is?
Really tall, and he's made out of metal.
Really? There's a real dude.
There's a real Stiltman in Marvel Comics.
Wow. Oh, I can catch up on
and
that.
He's just as dumb looking as you
does
can
he
imagine.
Wear clown makeup?
Yeah, I'll find out. No, he doesn't, actually.
All right. Well, here's some hammy dialogue from gangsters.
Hand me the dope line of the kid's dead.
Hand me the dough clown or the kid's dead.
The kid is going to get it. I'm going to whack him.
Oh.
Like I said, it's a cartoon. It felt like I was watching Roger Rabbit or something.
Give me the money, she.
That's what it felt like.
The kid's going to get it.
Yeah,
she.
Kid's going to get shot, see?
Is this bam, bam, bam. Is this before or after Johnny Dangerously?
After.
After.
Well, after.
96, right?
I love Johnny Dangerously.
Yeah.
I think I do. It's been so long. I don't know if I love it now. Here's some bad acting. Real, real, real bad acting.
Chris, they're going to kill you. Get out of here. Go!
Red, you're in charge now. No matter what happens, I'll come back. I swear to God, I'll come back.
He swears to the goat. He'll
I'll
come
find
back.
You. No matter what occurs.
I swear to goat.
Except to me, these are the chicks in the box because he never goes back to them. They write about it in the little story and say he does, but
yeah,
never actually
they are
again.
Totally chicks in the. This is the true definition of chicks in the bucket. They literally don't appear again. The lady doesn't count. So sorry, Twitter people who kept saying her, because she was there. She just was insignificant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she wrote the book.
Clips of her at the right. Exactly. And clips of her at the end in the. The photo
right,
montage.
Right.
Everyone
right.
Okay?
Yeah, it might sound like someone threw their mic down on stage and left.
That's it.
I'm out. I can't do it. I can't
that
do it.
That was my headset escaping the Earth's gravity. It is now in orbit.
Here's something about sharks.
I'm sure the sharks will enjoy you.
Oh yeah, it was the one-dimensional ship.
That's when he was. That's when he was knife raping Van Damme.
Yeah. Ooh, wow. That sound made it sound way worse than that scene was.
No, it was actually really bad. It made me feel very uncomfortable.
Did it? Okay, good.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to do. Here's a little Roger Moore.
It's daylight bloody robbery.
That's what I like to hear from
Daylight bloody robbery.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Here in the Queen's English, we don't say effing. cocky Bond time.
£50 says I can gain her most intimate confidence.
Come on, Dobbs.
He's another guy that didn't say much, but I like him and everything he's in. He's in lots of things. And he's a big red-faced toe man. He looks like a toe. It's like a big hairy toe. If you look at his head. All right. Carrie Newton is a bad actress.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Carrie Newton.
Ugh.
I'm Carrie Newton. Look at my hair.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Carrie Newton. All right. Let's go.
She was very pointless.
I haven't seen her in anything that I can recollect.
Memorable. Yeah.
Only
Janet
thing.
Janet Gunn is the actress.
Yeah. Janet Gunn was Cassie on Silk Stockings, if you ever.
I do remember that a little bit.
She was on Crossing Jordan. Are you familiar with that one?
Right. Yeah. That was a girl. That was a girl from one of the Law and Orders that left and started that. Right.
I'm pretty sure she was dating Van Damme or something.
Crossing Jordan had? It had that dude we like. That was just in Iron Man 3, played the vice president, and he had the coke snorting off the hooker in the RoboCop. You know the one.
Miguel
Morgan
Ferrer.
Freeman.
Yeah, Miguel Ferrer. He's.
Same initials, different guy.
I wish that was the last time I saw Officer Murphy. Put down your weapon. Next week, we have an even better connection for RoboCop.
Right.
Anyway, Carrie Newton, the character Carrie Newton, just what a waste. I don't think you guys knew this, but Roger Moore is actually a Lannister, and here's how I know.
And I always repay my debts.
There you go. Wow. Always appraise his debts. Usually it's kind of a threat when you say that.
That's interesting.
Racist.
Oh, hey, this is great. I thought I was going to get stuck with a couple little Oriental fellas didn't speak no English.
Perfect. Perfect. Just keep that in there. Let's see. I don't know what this is.
You don't have anything to do with this damn gang, do you?
Oh, yeah. What's he saying?
Dang.
You don't
dang.
Have anything to do with this damn gang, do you?
Damn gang.
Dang. Dang. Dang.
Like a flubbed line, and they just said, just keep it.
Right.
You just roll with it.
They actually said the name of the gang like a couple of times.
I was about to say, the guy probably tried to repeat it just as Van Damme told it to
him. If the gang is called Ging, that's a terrible gang. Because then you can't ever say anything. Gang. Yeah, the Ging Gang.
It is. I actually
said this is the work of the Ging Gang.
It's a Ging Gang or something. I think it is.
All right, fine.
Where's it at?
How about this one?
Welcome to Gan King.
Okay, what's that? What'd he say?
Welcome to my pants.
Welcome to Chung King.
Welcome to Don King.
That would be the that would be Tibet.
Okay. Welcome to Don King. Ging Gang.
Gong Gang.
I'd like to welcome the Ging Gang to Don King.
Right.
Oh my God.
All right. The big fat. Okay, so E Honda did a clap and I liked it, so I captured it. Here it is. Yeah. Hear that?
I didn't need any more slow mo fat.
Mm-hmm. And when he was getting punched, the internal noises it would make. Ugh. You guys are going to make him poop.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Yelling dad from Dexter. There's a slow motion point, right?
Yeah.
He did one of those. All right. Something about the dragon. I don't know.
I didn't get the golden dragon.
Okay. There is the internal dialogue, and that is not Van Damme. I just want you to hear it one more time. And I have another example of this after this one, Brian, but just check it out. Here you go.
I didn't get the golden dragon.
Okay, now maybe you could say that's him. But then I'll play this.
Cut the kids off the streets. In the end, we all did just fine.
That's not him, dude.
I think it is not him.
I would be shocked if someone could prove me otherwise on that.
Let's get him on the line.
Especially that last bit. Listen to this last bit.
Cut the kids off the streets. In the end, we all did just fine.
It's not yes. Van Damme, dude.
The part where he says, in the end, we all just fine. I think part of that is, and I think part of it's not.
I don't think it's him.
Stunt narrator?
I don't think
it's stunt narrator. I can't read this. Read this for me. What does it say?
Or a narrator double?
Because remember, when he says, he sounds so, I don't know, that's not him. All right, Fletcher.
Where did you get that haircut?
Oh, in the army? I forgot that was in our intro today. There you go. All right, well, if the big fat clap means anything, it means it's time for us to do awards. Ladies and gentlemen, belly on up to the bar and check out these awards this film won this week on Film Sack. The most comical heist of a big golden dragon award. That happened. The worst mustache on your Mongolian nemesis ever award. And the most spastic Chinese fighter of all time award. Easily runs away with it. That was a shoo-in. The other contenders had no chance. Star Trek Connections this week. Tim Song Jones was a sound transferer in Enterprise. Oh, no, I'm sorry. On this, he was sound transfer. On Enterprise, he was utility sound technician for 3 episodes. Those are the only connections.
That is super. I'm sorry, Trek nerd.
I know, dude.
That was lame.
Scraping the bottle of the barrel for that one.
And
he was a key grip.
This one guy saw Star Trek. And,
this one time on his way to work, Roger Moore walked through the set of a Star Trek.
Yeah. Him and Shatner shook hands once, drunk.
But you got to give Daryl props for working so hard for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I love it. I love it. He had to dig. That was way down the barrel there.
It's hard.
Let's see. Soundtrack great. I'd give it T for typical, but B for better than you thought it would be. So I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Randy Edelman. It reminded me a lot of Dragonheart.
Oh, yeah. A little bit.
Like, again.
Who had Sean Connery in it.
Yeah.
007 connection.
Yeah, that was a dragon too.
Interesting. Oh. Now we got to watch Hot Fuzz.
Oh. Why? What? Hot Fuzz, why?
What?
Because
it has another James Bond in it.
Oh, yeah, right. Timothy Dalton's in that. Mm-hmm. You're right. I love that movie. All right, well, let's get to the Twitter post. That's where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Each of you do this, and the first one we go with today is Randy.
The Quest, a street performer who knows how to walk on stilts and do really, really beautiful makeup, is also the greatest hand-to-hand fighter in the world. So, my autobiography, I suppose.
Fits right in. Also, Brian Dunaway.
The Quest. Stop me if you've heard this one before. An old man walks into a bar. Oh, not stopping me, eh? Too bad. How about Bloodsport? Had enough?
Old man Bloodsport. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
The Quest. This movie would make an excellent video game. Oh, wait, it did. It was called Mortal Kombat.
Just no magic.
True story.
All right. Here's,
I spent that one earlier in the show.
Yeah, you did. Here's what I learned while you only let your fat red face sidekick say 3 words for the entire film. In the Quest world, everywhere Van Damme jumps, there's something soft to land on.
My son noticed that.
Yeah, every time. Even knocked out on one. I was like, you don't get knocked out on that big pillow. What are you doing? It's like a magic-free production of Mortal Kombat. I mentioned that before. Any movie with an actor in it named Chang Ching Peng Chaplin is okay by me. This was, I forget who he played. Somebody.
More chins than a Chinese phone book.
Chang Ching Peng Chaplin is his name. The Chaplin part, I think that's, he must.
It's fake.
By marriage or something, I don't know. And then finally, all it takes to take Scotland fighter out of the picture is a swift punch to the crotch. And that's what I learned when I watched this movie. We got emails. Sean from Charlotte, I assume North Carolina.
Right.
There's probably other Charlottes. Hey guys, love the show. Question about Lockout. The Iron Man connection had Maggie Grace. Who does she play in that film? No. All right. We were wrong. Maggie Grace was nowhere near this movie.
I haven't seen the new Iron Man.
Well, you've seen Iron Man 1.
Oh, 1, yes.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Maggie Grace and the girl's name is, hold on. Leslie Bibb are doppelgangers.
Yes, they are. They are shockingly.
Really weird.
Let me see.
Like almost like sisters.
Yeah.
I'll be the judge of that. What's her name? Leslie.
You know Leslie Bibb.
I would actually go as far to say as they are almost like twins if they're sisters. Like it's really weird. And so none of us caught that when we were saying it because it's just that she looks the part and I never questioned it. So there's a third girl people are talking about that they look a lot alike or something. I forgot to write down who, but anyway, apparently they do, dude. If you see him on screen, you go, oh, same lady.
You just said doo-doo.
Yeah, doo-doo.
Doo-doo. Doo-doo.
Doo-doo. So thanks for that, Sean and Charlotte, and it was good for us to correct that. Brian Dowd wrote in, says, as you mentioned in the past episode, you should include The Relic in your review list. It's a decent monster movie and mostly doesn't take itself too seriously. Tom Sizemore was really good and probably the least douchey he's been in anything. He says it's also Penelope Ann Miller in that one, Brian Dowd. Now, this is a movie, this is one that's famous in my life for seeing it in the movie theater in 1994, maybe early 05.
97.
Are you sure?
The Relic is 97, yeah.
Are you sure? Because I think my daughter was just a baby.
Hold you on. Saw an advanced screening.
Hold on.
he saw a screening about 3 years before. It was
right. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. You're right. So anyway, this one is famous for my young infant daughter not making a sound and sleeping through the entire thing, even though it was loud and basically a horror movie. And I remember at the time thinking, this is sweet. Everyone can't take their kids to movies, but I can. That didn't last very long. Anyway, The Relic is on our list, I think. It should be if it isn't.
I was getting confused with Mimic when we saw Mimic. I was like, oh, yeah, this is with Penelope Ann Miller and the thing in the basement of the museum.
Right.
Right.
I liked it. Oops. I remember liking it a lot.
Let's just say The Relic is on our list now. And,
okay. All right.
The big film that everybody has been telling us this week that we've got to consider is FDR American Badass.
Yeah. Oh. I feel isn't like it's a little too on the nose. No, that thing ain't no TV show. It's too effety and sweary and dirty.
But I can tell you, coming up on FilmSack, next week we are watching The Philadelphia Experiment.
Yeah, that's happening.
It has something to do with science.
Well, can we address a quick thing real quick before we get past the FDR thing? And the reason I'm bringing this up is I just want to know kind of the consensus. When a movie is trying to be like, you know, it's a Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Or
it's parody, mm-hmm. kind of a... Yeah. Tongue-in-cheek.
They want to be campy kind of at the same time, but also knowingly, you know, like it's this purposeful camp thing that people are making. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about those as
FilmSack.
Well, yeah. Or even at all. Like,
wow. As a whole genre.
I guess, yeah. I guess they can be done. I guess it can sort of be done, right? But like Hobo with a shotgun, probably.
Shop back.
Hobo with a shotback.
Excuse me.
I think we finally have the right parody.
Hey, who hired that guy? He's just a hobo.
You can't get an electric outlet in the boxcar. It's no, killing him.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just this so obvious what you're doing. You know, machete.
your mispronunciations are killing me.
They're pretty good today. They're pretty good.
Love them.
But that kind of borders on that a little bit. And anything, like anytime Tarantino does something new, you're kind of like, oh, I see what you're doing there. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I should feel about this.
There's but I don't know if you can even put like Inglourious Basterds in with FDR American Badass.
No, I wouldn't do that.
FDR American Badass reminds me of something that Bruce Campbell would do, whereas Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter seems a little better. I don't know. Just seems a little more like they buy into what they're doing.
Yeah, but that movie was real bad. Apparently.
Right, right.
Yeah, but what Brian's saying is that it had a certain pedigree, Scott. It could have been so cosmopolitan.
Right, but this FDR thing, I don't know, there are people in that FDR thing I want to see do what they do. Like, there's actors in that. I'm like, that guy is in that? Really? Like, who paid who for this?
It feels like Bubba Hotep kind of style. Yeah.
A little bit.
It reminded
me of Danger 5, the UK or Australia. I can't remember if it's UK or Australian.
What is it? Danger 5?
Danger 5, it's like a parody of like Thunderbirds and those action group movie or TV shows in the 70s. Mm. And it's five people, one from France, one from the UK, one from Australia, one American. And they're total stereotypes, but it's done in like a police squad over-the-top humor level.
Like Fox Force 5?
I would enjoy that.
You would absolutely enjoy it. I think everybody should go check it out. There's clips of it on YouTube. You can find full episodes somewhere, I'm sure.
This is the era of this. Like, you don't make this movie in 1978. You make it in 2013.
Saying, listen, Scott, I just need to finish and sell my script about Teddy Roosevelt as a cannibal. Just hold on.
Okay, I'm ready.
Really? I'm making one about a teddy bear. It's going to be an animated feature I'm selling to Pixar.
Okay. So you're going straight mainstream on that.
President's brain gets put into a teddy bear given to his grandchild.
I'm going to make one called Don't Mess with Coolidge, and it's going to be it's going to be great. Gunplay and lots of fun stuff. No, I don't. It's not that I don't like these things or don't. It's just we live in that era of this is what people do now. Venture Brothers is a good example of an animated show that is just so so knowing and so ironic
like
about everything.
Johnny Quest on, you know,
yeah,
right.
Zucker Brothers, Johnny Quest.
Yeah, and it's great, and I like it, but I don't. At some point, I get a little worn out. The internet era, I think, is what has thrust this upon us, and I just get a little worn out on it. So I don't know. Maybe that FDR thing is a hoot, and we should see it. I don't know.
I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it.
Well, the internet thinks we should do it for the show. That's my bigger question. Oh, I'm going to see it. Whether I see it or not.
It's tough to do those for this show just because it's humor, and it's hard for us to talk funny about something that's trying to be funny. A lot easier for us to say.
Yeah. It's also easier for us when the films star people that we can relate to other films, like Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really like it becomes really hard when we've never heard of any of these people. They're all low budget.
Well, a couple of them, like the one guy, I always forget his name, but we've seen him in the Swamp Thing. He played the Swamp Thing doctor for about 5 seconds. He was in show that Brian loves, and I can't think. Well, I can't think of the show.
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. He was what's her name's dad.
Oh, yeah, the guy from Reaper.
The guy from 24, Reaper. Yeah, he played the devil on Reaper.
Yeah.
That guy. Ray Wise. Ray Wise, that's it.
Yeah.
Ray Wise is in it. Plays the secretary of something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a couple of dudes, and there's even the main guys played by somebody we've seen in other film sack movies. So it's not like there isn't anything there for us, but
right.
I just, like Brian says, when you're trying to be funny or you're trying to be, I like when people are trying to be earnest and it comes out funny.
Right. Right.
But that's hard to do, you know?
Yeah. This is an analysis of what we think works and what doesn't work. And comedy is so subjective. It's really hard to say. Something more serious is easy to go, okay, well, they were obviously going for this.
Yeah.
And it's also a matter of what the four of us kind of want to watch.
Yeah.
And just because something seems zany, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're all going to be like, oh, yeah, I really want to see this weird thing I never heard of before today.
Mm-hmm. But then there's the other example of something like Airplane, which we all like. We all think Airplane is great and probably a kind of a great example of a kind of humor that now is kind of getting buried with these stupid scary movies and stuff. But it was a thing that was really unique when it happened and came out. I have no desire to film sack that.
Right. And, right. You know, I've really never been that big of an Airplane fan. I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I thought it was okay. And I thought, you know, but I've never really been a huge fan of that kind of.
Brian's consternating was one of my favorite things. I love that thing. Does it once in a while. Pulls
crazy?
That out. Well, no, you know what? I think it's an acquired taste. And I've gone back and forth. And when I was a kid, I thought it was amazing. Then for a while, I was like, oh, I hate that movie. And then I kind of liked it again. And now I kind of have a weird respect for it.
Right.
But I don't know. Like we're always open to your suggestions, I guess, is the bottom line. If you guys have movies you think are worthy of all this, we'll consider things. But occasionally stuff will come our way and we'll just go, not really sackable. And like Randy says, sometimes we just don't want to see it.
So like I was saying, next week we're all going to sit down and watch the Philadelphia Experiment.
Oh, it's a true story of the creation of the greatest sandwich ever made. And I'm so excited. The cheesesteak. mm-hmm. Yeah. So look forward to that. The Philadelphia Experiment. By the way, this is the 84 version people should know.
Right.
So you don't go looking at some of the other. There's weird stuff on Netflix about the Philadelphia Experiment that you can find.
There's a reboot and everything else. Yeah.
So don't watch those.
After that, we're going to watch 1976's Swashbuckler.
I'm in.
Ah,
sweet.
I'm talking Robert Shaw, James Earl Jones, Peter Boyle, Beau Bridges, Angelica Houston.
Yeah. A movie you've never heard of, full of people you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
From people you trust.
Actually trust.
All right. That's it. That's going to do it for us. Thank you guys for being here and hanging out with us. You can email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Your feedback's always welcome. Movie suggestions, whatever you want. That'd be great. We're also on the web at filmsack.com. Check out our show notes and all the links to all the shows we've done, including our fantastic live action tracks where we just sit and listen and talk about the movie as it plays. You might enjoy those commentary tracks like we do. You can find them on Twitter or us on Twitter at filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes. Don't forget, Nerdtacular 2013 coming up soon, and the film we're going to watch is Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Search for Spork.
I cannot wait to find the Spork. It's fell in the grass somewhere. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
And that's me.
We'll see you next time.
You want some whiskey in that?
No.
Coffee?
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.